This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Power Cat Podcast, presented by Fridge Wholesale Liquor. Now let's go to the rolling Flint Hills, home of the Cats and Dogs studio. Here's your host, Tim Fitzgerald.
Welcome to the Power Cat Podcast. We're sponsored by Fridge Wholesale Liquor. Tim Fitzgerald, Zach Carlson in the Cats and Dogs studio, and sandwiched in the middle like a lovely little treat right here on YouTube is Ryan Gilbert. We just got off work, so he probably smells of, it's just going to play the game, huh? He probably smells like tacos and regrets.
Tacos and tequila.
Oh, that's good. That's on brand because we're sponsored by a liquor store. If you haven't been to the Fridge recently, go into the Fridge. Here's something really cool about the Fridge. They get new products all the time, and people buy old products, and then they get fresh. They get fresh from their vineyards of whiskey trees and vodka bushes right there. It's somewhere behind the Fridge. Fridge Wholesale Liquor in the corner of this and that. That was a loud swallow by Ryan Gilbert. Congratulations.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes. I apologize.
Yes. But make sure you go check out the Fridge. Boys, what a game. I mean, I honestly, again, proving why I should never sports bet. I would have bet everything Kansas was going to beat Kansas State on Monday just because of the way the teams had been playing. And I know better than that, but I didn't see that coming. And let's be honest, I feel like K-State left a lot out on the court that they could have capitalized on and won by a bigger margin, but they didn't. And they still got the win in overtime. It was pretty cool. There's a lot of doom going on. It was a great environment. Zach, you got the reading duties today?
I do.
Okay. Let's go to your questions from Wabash Station. And of course, everyone gets to watch or listen to the podcast, but to ask the questions, you've got to be a VIP over at GoPowerCat. I think we have a special rolling right now. Go check that out. Head on over to GoPowerCat.com. Check out our special. It'll make you happy. It'll give you warm fuzzies if you're not a subscriber. And also give you a good deal. Zach, take it away.
From El Camino Cat. 11 consecutive overtime wins for Coach Ting's Cats. How? Why?
It's not as good as Florida State. I just saw that stat. They got 14 going right now.
Wow.
I mean, no one's even close to those two schools. And it's still going. It says current. But I don't understand it. I would just like to say, once again on Monday night, I did the work of all of us olds who need their bed, need their sleep, and told Jerome Tang, could you get your work done in 40 minutes and not need the extra five? Could you stop doing this? It's past my bedtime. And whatever you're doing in that final five, just do that in the final five of the regular game. It's pretty remarkable. It's incredible. Gills, I never felt confident about K-State winning that game until it went to overtime. It's the damnedest thing.
That's true, yeah. I mean, it's no fluke. It's, you know, I think the answer to the question here is five to grind. Like, that's what they practice every day. The last 5 minute situations, they simulate late game scenarios. And so I think that that's certainly it's been a big help for K-State in these overtime games, without a doubt. But yeah, I mean, once it goes to overtime, you're thinking, okay. I mean, I was, one of my buddies had a parlay on the game, and I think he had K-State money line and something else. But, you know, once it goes to overtime, we're like, okay, the money line is going to be good. Now we just need this guy to grab a rebound or something. And so, yeah, it's it's really tough to explain, but I think five to grind, man. I mean, Naquan Tomlin even put on his Instagram story after the win, five to grind. That's all he said. So I think it's that's your answer, five to grind.
Okay. Well, good. That sums up your sex life too. Zach?
Well, I lost my train of thought.
I bet you did.
What, move on?
Yeah,
go ahead. You good? Okay. From Rumble Power Cat, welcome. Hey. Did the win against KU save the season?
Mm-hmm. Look, there was other avenues to, quote, save the season. Yeah. This wasn't the only way to do it. And it's rescued in the moment, if you know what I mean. Now, the moment can change so quickly, as Monday night proved. So go to BYU. If you win that game, you really have changed your season around because you get to come home and play a game. But they go out there and lose, and I'll just say this. They can't lose at home again. They absolutely cannot lose at home again. If they accomplish that, they're going to be at 500. So in some ways it did, because it got them back to the balance of they've given one away at home and stolen one on the road. They get another one or two on the road. I don't see how they're not an NCAA tournament team. And that's the other portion of this. Saving the season as in getting to that 9-9 that we feel like and Jerome Tang feels like is the floor for getting into the NCAA tournament. I mean, you got to get past that to kind of guarantee you to be in. If you're in the Big 12 and you go 9-9, you're going to be in. But more than that, beating a team that was ranked number 4 helps all of that resume. It just boosts everything. More so than if you win at BYU and win here and there and you kind of piece things together by being all the mid-level teams, which are top 25 teams of this conference. But still, having that statement win over Kansas really helps your resume.
With you mentioned the resume. That's huge to beat KU. I think if K-State gets to 9 wins now, 100%, that's good. It's going to be good enough, like Jerome Tang has been saying. But if you don't beat KU and your wins are only to like Cincinnati coming up and West Virginia here at home in Bramlage, if those are your wins and you get to 9 wins the easy way, mm-hmm. maybe that's not going to be enough to get you in. But now that you've beaten the number 4 team in the country, I think that alone plus 9, getting to 9 is going to be good. So this win certainly did turn the season around. Now, obviously, there is still a latter portion of Big 12 play to go. This win's not going to mean anything if you go out and lose to BYU on Saturday, and it's not going to mean anything because you have a whole week off. So K-State's going to, mentally, they're going to have one win in basically like a week and a half, right? So
yeah,
the losing streak was alarming, and I think we're all glad it's over as Dude is hopping up on the couch. I like to see you, Dude. But I don't want to say that the win doesn't mean anything, but it gets negated if you – get follow up and steal a road game at BYU. Fitz, you mentioned that K-State has to protect its home court. I agree, yes. But if you can steal some road games, then you do give yourself that sort of wiggle room at home to maybe drop a game that you shouldn't be losing. But, I mean, the line of this game, I think it closed at 3.5 points, right? It just goes to show you that, like, you are kind of expected to win your games at home regardless of who you're playing. Same thing happened with KU. They were actually underdogs, and they went out and destroyed Houston at home on Saturday. And so you've got to protect your home court. And the question, does this win turn the season around? Yes, it does, but it doesn't unless you don't protect your home court. Stealing a victory on the road, one or two victories away from home, is going to be big as well. So, you've got a full 5 days of rest heading into BYU after you had maybe a quick walkthrough prior to KU, because that was a quick 48-hour turnaround, right? So, it's obviously a big win for Kansas State. Can't say enough about it. I'm sure we got some more questions with the KU game, but it's not going to mean anything if this is the high point of your season. You've got to keep working and treat it like any other game. Tang always talks about one-game seasons, win or lose. You flush it, you move on, put it in a box, and prepare for the next game. So that's what K-State has to do for the next, 8 more games, right? For the next 8 games of conference play, got to lock in. And I know this is not the standard that Jerome Tang wants for his program, but all you've got to do is win 4 games. That's all you need to do.
True.
And I've been looking at this. I mentioned this to Fitz yesterday when we were leaving football media. But you go back to last year's schedule, January 24th, Year to the day, play at Iowa State, you lose. K-State was 6-1 going into that game. This year, K-State was 4-1 going into that game. 6-2, 4-2. Obviously, this year, K-State goes on that slide. But you got to remember last year, they play Florida at home, SEC Challenge. They win that game, yes. It's a little win, but it's not a conference win. But you go three straight conference losses. You go at Iowa State, at KU, and Texas at home. You drop those three. You can draw a lot of parallels there. The Texas game's the OU game. You know, at KU is at Houston. You know, there's a lot of parallels that you can make to last year's season and how it stacked up. And this slide, I think if KU loses or if K-State loses to KU on Monday, yes, I think everybody's pushing the panic button. But K-State last year went 1-6 over that January 24th to February 14th schedule there. If K-State can go and get a win at BYU on Saturday, yeah, the record's a little different, you know, just the way the January kind of made up. But you're almost at the same point as what you were last year. Then K-State went on a great run. Yes, K-State was ranked. They were in the top five at one point last year. It's a different team, different situation. But I think that there's a lot of parallels that you can make. They were able to turn it around after this point last year, having a slide late January, early February. This KU win might galvanize them going forward through the rest of conference play. Plus, they get a bye week, which is really rare that they get to catch their legs, catch their breath. You know, they get to gear up for this last part of the season. There's winnable games on the schedule for sure. You go to Cincinnati there, you know, you might be able to pick off a road win there. You might be able to go to Texas and get a road win. So I think that there's a lot of winnable games once you get through this brutal stretch, kind of like what we talked about. But if you can go to BYU and get a win, things are looking up for this season.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For all of you watching on YouTube, this is what we've got going here. I thought I added you to the stage. We got to hold on. It did a wrong thing here. But yeah, you can see dude over there on the couch just hanging out, and Daphne, you can see what I'm doing while everyone's answering questions. I'm scratching a dog head.
I've never seen him do that with the pillow. It's kind of sad.
Yeah. Dude, that's pathetic, man. Are you sad? Are you sad Gills isn't here? Is that what?
Okay. Yeah, I would miss me too. Come on now.
I know. Okay, let's remove the studio and get back to business here.
Next question, though.
What happened when K-State was in that funk? Did somebody tweet something out that K-State should switch something up with its team and Jerome Tang?
I don't remember that.
Somebody might have suggested.
There's nothing there. There's nothing.
Starting lineup change.
Nobody suggested any kind of changes.
I don't think you suggested to put Colbert in the starting lineup, though, did you?
I didn't suggest it, but my goodness, I don't think we have a question about Colbert. He's been awesome. I know he didn't score any points against KU, but I was not happy when I saw Will McNair go out for K-State in overtime. I would have much rather have seen Jerome Colbert. Now, I get it. He's not ready to play like 30 minutes a game. He's just not physically like conditioned to do that. But I mean, he only played 16 minutes against KU, guys. I think Jerome Colbert's stock is rising.
Yep.
The first defensive possession of the game, I plan on breaking this down in the film study, but it was huge for Jerome Colbert just to get a block against Hunter Dickinson, just to set the tone and be like, yeah, I can hang with you, man. I don't care that this is my second career start. Jerome Colbert was awesome against KU. His plus minus was through the roof, and Will McNair, I don't want to pick on McNair, but his plus minus was like minus 15. So I didn't call for this change in the starting five, but I love Jerome Colbert in there at the five spot. He has been great for K-State over the last two games.
He's got some skill sets that are beginning to come out. I think they're beginning to find his upside. It's beginning to develop. Now, you know I'm not a big fan of the over, under, the plus minus on the stat sheets. That's a reflection of, did your team outscore or get outscored while you were on the court? And there's so many variables in there. Yeah. All right. I talked to Tang about it after the game, and he said, look, this is something we use over the course of the season. This is something we look at with certain lineups. And was the lineup not functioning well, or did we not give them what they needed from the bench in terms of play calls and whatever? Jerome Colbert played 16 minutes. He was plus 18 in those 16 minutes. That is being plus 18 is remarkable in a 5-point win. But doing that in fewer minutes than what you were plus is incredible. And I also told Coach Tang that, let's be honest here, I'm a little surprised you scored 18 points in 60 minutes. And proving what a good dude he is, he laughed about that. But yeah, I mean, that's incredible. That is impacting the game. And while I'm not a fan of that, after watching the game and then looking at that, I get it. I thought K-State was better when he was on the court, and I think that flushes it out. We'll see if that has any reflection on what's going forward. And I thought Will McNair was pretty good. I mean, having his big body to defend was helpful. He wasn't great, but he was in there just absolutely battling. And, you know, he is what he is. He can score around the rim a little bit, but I thought Colbert was the better of the bigs.
Next question's from MN Wildcat 1. Welcome. Halfway through the basketball season, does K-State win 9 conference games to get to the NCAA tournament?
I'm not ready to say yes. Look, the win was huge. It was amazing on Monday. It was an incredible environment, incredible kind of reset moment, but reset for how long? They were coming off a 4-game skid. And for me, it wasn't about the results as much as it was about the effort and the focus and the attention to detail. I thought their attention to detail against Kansas was really good. Still had 16 turnovers. So there's area for improvement there. Gills, I thought the biggest thing to come out of that could fuel them forward was Tyler Perry hit 2, if not 3, of his 3-pointers running, you know, the offense and catching a ball. Catching and shooting, not dribbling and not just, I'm going to put this one up, catching it in a rhythm and shooting. And I think K-State has to find ways to do that more often. If that's what Day-Day Ames trying to run the point in the half court, I understand their hesitation. He's still turnover prone and you're trying to stop the turnovers, but I think he's a better creator. He keeps his head up and looks for people. And you know, I can see them with an opportunity to almost do a Jacob Poland. You've got the ball this possession because we're running a play for Tyler coming off some screens and catching at the 3-point line. I think it's a good move for him. And yeah, if they start to do that, they're going to cruise to 9 wins in this conference and probably past.
Yeah, I think the offense was good against KU with more movement and stuff, more screens, more action. The ball sitting in, you know, guys' hands, just generally speaking, is not going to be resulting in, it can maybe result in points, but it's not going to result in good looks at the rim. And so I think Monday was a good step in the right direction for that offense. And yeah, you've got to get Perry going. You got to get him cooking. Get him to do what he did on Monday night in the second half, in the last few minutes of that first half. You need that for 40 minutes. How many times have we said that this season, guys? Seems like every week. You know, Tyler Perry is dormant for the first half and then comes alive in the second half. So I think the biggest thing with K-State, you know, making the NCAA tournament, winning 9 games, Zach, I think you said it best with K-State last season kind of doing this same sort of thing where they kind of, I don't want to say mess around in Big 12 play, but, you know, they go on a losing streak and, you know, fans are concerned. Okay, what's going on here? K-State at this very moment is still not, There's work to do for that NCAA tournament resume. I think they're not even a next 4 team out. There is work to do. That being said, I think that you look at what happened last year, and Tang is always preaching peaking at the right time. I don't know if this is, you know, game one of this, you know, steep upward, you know, like peak that we're about to see from Kansas State, but certainly I think that this is going to be, you know, maybe they win 2 and lose 1, win 1, lose 1. But I think you're gradually going to see this team start to rise up now after this win. I think that Oklahoma State loss, we're going to look back at the season, whatever happens in postseason play, we're going to say that was the lowest point of the season. You might have a frustrating loss here moving forward. But I think K-State gets to 9 wins just based off of what we saw last year. The trajectory that team went on seems like a very similar path that we're on right now. In K-State, you know, this is kind of the time last year they kind of kicked it into that next gear because these are the games that really do start to matter more and you don't want to peak too early. I know I've talked about this a lot on here, the USC loss to open up the season. You know, a lot of these games in the non-conference was not necessarily about winning. It was about finding stuff out about your team. I think a similar analogy is the sword, right, that Jerome Tang has, and they're forging it, and it's getting sharper and sharper, right? And now you know how to do that. You know how to get it to be the sharpest that it can be. So it's coming along. It's coming together. And so that's why I believe KCN will get to 9 wins and get in at least 9 wins. And so I think if you're Jerome Tang or whatever, you want to get to a point where, you know, you're like 8-5 in the Big 12 and you're saying, screw 9 wins. Like, yeah, let's win 11, right?
I mean,
so I think that's going to be the goal for Kansas State. If you can find a way to win a few more games here in these next couple of weeks, don't go for 9. You know, go for a 5 seed and try to get somewhere closer to home. And, you know, when that stuff comes around in March Madness, you know, help out, you know, your seeding rather than if you're going to make it. I think that's the next step for this K-State team, and they're certainly capable of getting there if they can win some games.
K-State fell to 7-6 last year. That was their low point in conference play. K-State goes 2-1 the next three games at BYU, TCU at home, at Texas. They are 7-6, and I think that 2-1 over the next three games. I'm not going to say it's going to be easy. No. But I think it's realistic. I think there's an expectation that you can go and win one of these next two road games and beat TCU at home.
So we're in the 7-game stretch that I talked about many times. In some ways, it's an 8-game stretch if you throw that Texas game in. But let's do the 7-game stretch. They're 1-4. I said to win 2 games, you're going to be 500 coming out of this. So if they can steal a win at BYU or against a really good TCU team next week in Bramlage Coliseum, they're going to be there. But if they then, you know, if you add in that Texas game to be an 8th one, if you get 3 wins out of those 8 games, you're above 500. I mean, you're 7-6. You're in good shape as you come down the home stretch, and because the home stretch isn't easy. I mean, you got to go to Kansas and just this conference. Oklahoma State was the easy games. That's it. I mean, West Virginia's coming in. Maybe that can be considered easy, but Josh Eilert's kind of got them playing a little bit better. But when you have to scrap out a home win and you lose on the road to Oklahoma State, you've dug yourself a hole that you got to earn your way out of, and that's where K-State's sitting right now.
Last question of the first half is from Itame BB. What is your prediction for the Wildcats seed in the Big 12 tournament?
Boy, I haven't even thought about that. I think they'll be in that 7-9 range, 7-10 range.
Day 2.
Yeah. The bracket is wild. I mean, there's a whole nother day of stuff going on, basically. So it's there's going to be such good teams in the middle of that bracket. And this thing could be an absolute zoo. The Big 12 tournament, I can't wait for the fans of the new schools to show up and find out why Kansas City is cool. Look, I'm all in on Vegas. If eventually they want to move it there, I'm not going to complain, but Kansas City and basketball is special. They don't understand that. So let's keep bringing these teams in and see where we're at with this. And it could be an absolute zoo in Kansas City. It's going to be fun.
K-State's currently 8.
Yeah. So maybe they could get up to 6 if they win. But again, trying to predict that without even looking at the schedules of the other teams or having any clue what to do. Hell, if you can look at the schedule and have no clue how those games will come out, I mean, yeah, if they can get up in there. But it's amazing. It really is. This conference, I think now it's going to take 5 losses will win you the conference. 6 might do it too. 6 losses in conference might win the Big 12. Winning 2/3 of your games will be a remarkable statement on how good you are. Enough said.
All right, so I think Oklahoma State, West Virginia, and UCF, I'm pretty confident in saying K-State is going to finish up above them. But other than that, there are zero locks. And so I think I'll give one team in there that K-State will finish above. So I'll go 10. I think K-State's a 10 seed, which I know is probably lower than what you might think, and especially after what we've just, you know, hyped this team up and all that. But the Big 12 is good, obviously, and it's going to be tough to compete. But again, you want to get to a point where that Big 12 tournament doesn't necessarily matter, and you can afford to drop a game. Like last year, K-State got, and I don't want to say embarrassed, but TCU handled Kansas State and Kansas City. It was a quick one-game trip for the Wildcats. And so you don't have momentum going into March Madness, but K-State proved that that didn't matter last year. So you want to get to a point like it was last season. Okay, you lose to TCU, brush it off, didn't hurt the resume too much. You're going to be good to go.
True. That's it for the first half of the Power Cat Questions podcast. We hope you're going to stick around. I don't know if you will. Maybe you'll be like, dude, you're like, I need a nap. But we'll be back here talking about sports right after this short break.
We'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors.
Please visit the Fridge Wholesale Liquor, located at the corner of Claflin and Westport Road in Manhattan, Kansas.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Welcome back to the show. Let's return to the Cats and Dogs studio.
Welcome back to the Power Cat podcast. Tim Fitzgerald, Zach Carlson here in the Cats and Dogs studio. And sandwiched in the middle is Ryan Gilbert from the secret Aggieville studio. I'm never going to say where he lives because it's for your safety. It's for viewer safety that I don't let you know more details on where the hidden studio is at.
There might be a conspiracy that Go Power Cat bought back its old Aggieville office, and that's where I'm at.
Yes, that's where I'm living. Basement storage room.
Yep. Yeah, that. Yeah, we should rent out the haunted upstairs for you. The old projector room at the old Go Power Cat headquarters in Aggieville gave you the worst creeps ever. It was just creepy up there. Footsteps at night.
Has the Aggieville Business Association had any run-ins with Yo? Have they said? Have they
I don't
told
know.
Us? Have we have not inquired?
No. I'm not in Aggieville very often, and if I am, I go to see the guy that's in the middle of the screen, usually when he's working, and or I go with you guys for dinner after a show or something. And let's be honest, I'm not thinking about anything else when Ryan Gilbert's my bartender. All my focus is on him because he's special. On with your questions from Wabash Station. We're sponsored by the Fridge Wholesale Liquor. Make sure you go check them out whenever you're in town. Great people, great products, great prices. I love it over at the Fridge. I'm just going to call it my second home, even though I don't drink much anymore. I just go there and hang out and maybe buy some orange juice. On with the podcast. Here's Zach Carlson with more of the questions from Wabash Station.
From Momo Cat, is there any way to limit turnovers, or are we just going to have to accept that that is what they are going to do?
Gills, you take this one. I'm interested in hearing.
Yeah, I completely think that Jerome Tang and his staff have just accepted it, which in our mind, like to us, I think that's unacceptable. But for them, it's just like it's just part of the reality of who this team is. They're going to take their chances, and it's going to be sloppy. I know that. Like Fran Fraschilla tweeted this out during the game on Monday that K-State's passing vision is very poor, not only with making, you know, just poor passes, but also, you know, not passing the ball on a pick and roll and missing open guys. I think that's part of it. But when you don't have a true point guard on your team, makes sense, right? So, but no, I think K-State's just living, they're just going to live with it. And I know that's not something that you should just accept, but I truly do think that they're just kind of accepting it because they have won games with, you know, they had 16 against KU, right? They're winning games despite the turnovers. Now, I'm sure they want to get this number down, but I'm going to be quite honest with you guys. I think offensive rebounding, and I think getting to the free throw line and also limiting fouling on defense, I think that that is the biggest area for Kansas State in their stat, in their mind, not for us. I'm not saying this is what they need to do. In their minds, that's what's most important to them, is getting better in those areas, fouling, rebounding, getting the free throw line, right? Yeah. Not turnovers, which I think is crazy to say when they are dead last in the Big 12 at turning the ball over. It's like 26% of all possessions for this K-State team end without getting a shot up, which is a turnover.
Horrible.
Right? So that's horrible. It's crazy to think that you can win games like that, but they are. I don't know. I can't explain that, but they are.
One in four trips
are wasted.
No.
Waste.
Yeah. Are wasted. Garbage. Now, here's my thoughts. First of all, Fran Fischel has nailed it. Tyler Perry's court vision is horrible. It's horrendous. He never looks at the guy picking and rolling. This got to change, man. If you're going to be the ball handler, you got to do ball handler things. And this is really holding K-State back because I think he gets a little panicked in that moment of congestion, and he just never really raises his head and scans the floor the way you need to. Also, the passing on this team remains fairly atrocious, not just the vision of recognizing guys, but there was a play early in the game when I can't remember who it was. Someone was passing it around the outside of the three-point line. The defense wasn't even pressuring and missed Arthur Kaluma by about 2 feet. And he had to reach out and try to knock the ball down. It rolled towards the half-court line. He had to go get it. This is a pass between two guys that aren't being closely defended. This is, you know, a pass you can make in practice. And he misses him by 2 feet. Kaluma's got to scramble to get the ball. And now the shot clock is under 10. Now they're scrambling to get a shot up. It's that kind of attention to detail that drives me crazy. And as I said in the open, they left so many opportunities. They did so many things still that don't translate to winning in the course of this game, including Coach Tang not taking some timeouts on some possessions late in the second half. Thank you, Daphne. And also late in or during the overtime in which the offense was floundering, not doing it. You got a timeout right there. Call that timeout, reset, run a play, because honestly, when Tyler gets below 10 seconds on that shot clock and the ball's in his hands, once in a while, something good will happen. Something miraculous happened in the overtime with his spin off the backboard, but most of the time, it's not going to end well. It's just not. I'm going to lose my mind with his, I'm going to pass it to you with 1 second left on the shot clock routine. Dude, you got to start the offense earlier than that, and you got to hit someone that you want to make a play sooner than that. Don't dump the ball on a teammate right before the shot clock expires and give them the turnover. It's an awful habit. He's got to stop it.
This is a side note. Does it bother you guys as much as it bothers me that Tyler Perry is always the one inbounding the ball on the baseline? He's the shortest guy on the court.
I'm with you.
And
he's the best shooter in America.
And half the time they're at 3 or 4 seconds and he's got to fling it to Kaluma in the backcourt. Or whoever's back there. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me, that play. It's bugged me all year. I don't think I've ever mentioned it before to you guys, but I don't understand it.
The best shooter in America should be catching those passes.
Right.
So I'm with you. I get it.
There's some truth to that. I mean, setting something up for him to come off a screen and catch and shoot, I'm in.
Why? Like, it makes no sense to me. Absolutely none.
I would agree.
Next question. I hope I'm saying this right. Send me a PM on the site if I am not. Bahulit? I don't know. New name. I have not heard it.
Welcome to the site.
Welcome. Bahulit. I don't know. took our best guess. Oh. Have you ever seen a player who plays so differently from the first half to the second half?
No.
Never.
No. I am like in the first half and, you know, maybe early second, I'm like, what is he doing on the floor? We're talking about Tyler Perry, if you didn't follow.
Yes.
What is he doing out there? I feel like going with Day-Day and Cam might be the better solution here. I sometimes feel like RJ would be the better shooter out there. And yet, he's out there. And why is he out there? Because eventually he does what he did. And it's miraculous. There's not many people in the country that can take over a game against Kansas the way he did in overtime. 8 of 11, K-State's 11 points, or him in overtime. That's why you leave him out there. But I would like to see them cut down his minutes in the first half because he is now consistently not good in the first half. And when I say not good, I don't mean just scoring or shooting. He's just not good. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing him to be a little bit better rested as the game goes on by maybe playing some of those young guys. But also, they have a lot of trust in him to do the right thing. And I'll bluntly put, it exceeds my trust.
I would agree with that. Yeah. I mean, there's nobody that even comes to mind, like with being a second half player. Like, I can't recall anybody that's been like this where it's just bad in the first half. And I don't care if Tyler Perry doesn't score. Like, that's okay. There's going to be games where you're on the scouting report and you're going to go 0-for-2 from the field, and that, you know, that you're going to have those games. But Perry's not dishing out the ball. He's not getting 7 assists in those first half. He's turning it over, you know, sloppiness. It goes beyond just not having that ability to score in the first half. So I agree, Fitz. They must see something in practice that we just don't see. Because if I was in charge, I mean, he's not going to play 45 minutes in a conference game when you've got a road trip. I know it's a long rest, but you've got a BYU trip coming up, and you know, I'm giving Dorian or RJ some minutes, not all of them. Like, I'm not saying bench Perry, but give him a rest, because you know, his second halves are great. Imagine if he had a little bit of a fresher legs under him, he would be even better. And then in those late game moments, he wouldn't be as fatigued and all that. So there is no explaining it. It's very similar to the whole overtime stuff. Now, obviously you can give a reason, but it's just crazy when you look at how different Tyler Perry is in the second half. And obviously it's frustrating because you want to see that from a full 40 minutes from him. But I don't know if it's mental, because in the second half, like, okay, you're down by 2, you need a bucket, just boom, go out and make a play. And then you're starting to just kind of show the signs of playing like a point guard, right? Whereas in the first half, I think there's a game plan you're trying to follow. Maybe there's too much on your plate mentally. You know, I've already missed a shot or two. Do I really want to take this one? I do. Now I forced one. You know, okay, how was, you know, who was, you know, this game plan, who, you know, who's the mismatch on defense that I've got to look for, and all this stuff maybe goes through his head in the first half. I don't know. I'm just speculating, but I can tell you for a fact that in the second half of games, you know, late, he turns it up and he plays, and he just plays naturally, and he's not thinking. I'm very confident in that. The first half, I think, is still a little bit of a mystery. That's my hunch. But later on in games, he's just going out and playing and doing his best at channeling his inner Marquise Noel.
Moving to football, next question is from TConman08. Do you think that we will see K-State use Avery Johnson ultra-conservatively in the run game like we saw during the Pop-Tarts Bowl?
Not that conservative, but they're not going to run him 20 times by choice. Maybe there'll be games where Daphne, Dad is working right now.
What did Daphne do?
She's just pawing at me. Got to have that attention. Maybe there's going to be times when, you know, he's flush from the pocket or the coverage is so good, he's got to run it more often. But from designed run plays, they're going to be cautious. The quarterback room is still a work in progress. As deep as it was last year, it's not that deep. I mean, you got the veteran walk-on from Washburn. Excuse me, his name's escaping me. You've got a high school freshman coming in who's uber talented, but also coming off a really bad injury. And you're going to have, you know, Jacob Knuth will be the backup. He's got to make a lot of progress. He's got to be available. He's got to be not a huge step down and find his way to help this offense that doesn't try to be Avery Johnson. You're not going to be Avery Johnson. I mean, when someone comes in for Patrick Mahomes, they got to do their thing. Yeah, you just got to do your own thing. And then they're going to have a preferred walk-on in this class to get to five in that room. But, boy, that's, you know, just having the athletic ability of a Jake Rubley in that room and the athleticism or the arm strength of an Adrian Lara, that's gone. It's gone now. And so they're going to have to keep him healthy, but they got to win games. And you can't just ignore an incredible weapon like Avery Johnson carrying the ball if you want to win games. It's going to be a balance all year long, trying to keep him healthy and upright. It's going to be a test. He's got to get some more muscle mass on him to survive some of the wear and tear he's going to have to go through in Big 12 as a starter.
Am I remembering this correctly that someone said when, I don't know if you guys are watching on TV, but Avery Johnson came over to the sideline once and Chris Klieman just yelled run at him and he's face lit up and smiled. And I think he went on to go score that touchdown. I think that's the type of runs you're going to see Avery Johnson have. I think he's going to have the freedom to do what he feels comfortable with. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to draw plays up. I don't think that they are, you know, going to say you're going to run this down the middle every single time or, you know, whatever. But I think that Avery Johnson is going to have the license to do as he pleases on the football field, whether that's, you know, option, RPO, or, you know, just running it himself. You know, I think he's going to dictate how much he runs. I don't think that any protection outside of play calling, you know, I think what the coaches call from design plays is what is going to protect right. him from, you know, the injuries or being conservative. I don't think that Avery's going to be restricted, so to speak.
Yeah. K-State's got a history of quarterback power. That's been a staple in this playbook from Bill Snyder to Colin Klein calling the plays. It's probably not going to be very common. They'll run it once in a while, but again, he's got a rebuilt offensive line. So we don't know if quarterback power would work the same without a BB out there. Let's be blunt about it.
Running the football against NC State in the Pop-Tarts Bowl with Avery just doesn't give you – you don't benefit much from it. Everybody knows that Avery Johnson's a good runner, right? And you don't want to risk injury. And, you know, with it being sort of like an extra game in, you know, that first game of next season, so to speak, you want to find out some stuff about other players. And so, you know, for me personally, I didn't look into that really at all just because everybody knows that Avery Johnson – is a very good, you know, athlete, and he can run the football. And it's not like those are certain plays that take 100 reps or practice in a bowl game or, you know, live game experience to run. I mean, you know, we talked about Tyler Perry second half, just go out and play. I think it's very easy for Avery Johnson, no matter what the play call is. If it's a running play, it's going to be pretty dang easy and it's going to be pretty cut and dry what he's supposed to do, right? So yeah. I don't look into much of this with the Pop-Tarts Bowl.
Good.
Last question of the podcast from El Camino Cat. Going into spring football, which position group do you feel the best about and which group gives you the most concern?
People love asking this question, man. We always get this one, don't we?
Heading into Evergreen. Week 3, yeah. Heading into June. But no, this is really valid for right now. I probably oddly feel best about linebacker. I mean, that's... You've got Austin Moore back. You've got the young guys that, you know, have showed such great potential. Des Purnell. I mean, you've got some really nice pieces there. And probably most worrisome, it continues to be receiver until I see something. And some elements of the fullback tight end, the H-back version, you know, having Ben Sennett, who can block so well out of the backfield as a tight end, it's going to be great for him in the NFL. Losing him is not great because someone has to replicate that as they've kind of phased out the fullback spot. And there's a lot of young tight ends maybe that can step up and be that guy. I don't know. That part of the offense, the power part of the offense, and also trying to get the ball downfield. If there's one thing to say about my lesson from last season is I thought Keegan Johnson would be the Keegan Johnson we saw towards the season's end. Throughout the year, it didn't work that way. So, guys, I got to see it to believe it at receiver. I just need it. Mr. Cephas, I loved talking to you the other day at a press conference. Great young man. Let's see it translate to the field. They need it.
I actually feel pretty good about wide receiver. Chase Brown, Keegan Johnson, Jaden Jackson, Dante Cephas. There's four guys right there. Trey Spivey. I mean,
I still got to see it.
Sure. That's fine on a couple of those guys, but I feel pretty good about the room that they have for the first time in probably maybe Chris Kleiman's tenure here at K-State.
I feel good about Chase Brown. I do.
I feel good with the weapons they have at wide receiver, at least for the moment. You know, it's definitely not the place that I'm worried. I'd probably be most worried about offensive line just from attrition. Just you have to replace pretty much everybody on that line. Yeah, you got a couple of holdovers like Hadley Panzer, but you know, you've got to figure out what you're going to do with that offensive line, and that's the biggest question mark for me. You know, they could be a bunch of five-star recruits, you know, whole roster full of top 24/7 guys. I still want to see it, kind of like you say about the wide receivers. They need to figure out that offensive line, and it needs to get going pretty early in the season if they're going to have good success.
Yeah.
I like what both of you guys said with the wideouts. Like, Zach, I agree. I feel pretty dang good about who they've got there. Fitz, I agree as well, though, that you got to see it. You know, K-State's never had, ever since Chris Kleiman took over, a group that we can 100% say is reliable, that we're not going to have to really worry about their play, right? There's never been a collective group where you can say, okay, you know, they're going to handle business, right? As far as, I think, Fitz, you nailed it on the head with the linebackers. I think that group certainly has the highest floor of any. You know, Des Purnell and Austin Moore, you know what you're getting there. Two guys that have been able to stay healthy at Kansas State. I think that's certainly maybe not like going to be the best group, or I don't know if I feel the absolute best about them, but I know they're not going to disappoint. They're not going to be a group that loses K-State's games this season.
Let me add that I'm not feeling great about the offensive line in terms of what they'll be like in the spring, but the spring doesn't matter. In fact, I'm kind of happy that they get the spring to, you know, beat up those guys, get after those guys, challenge those guys. Connor Riley mentioned some new leaders emerging. Well, let's test that leadership, put them through a little stress in the spring. I'm going to feel okay about them probably as game one approaches. But I look at Carver Willis maybe as an example. It's going to take a little while, but do they have a little while to survive in essentially a 10 game Big 12 schedule with a road game at Tulane to challenge you too? Going into spring, I need to see the development at receiver, and I need to hear people say to tell me they look good. They're not screwing it up. They're being efficient. They're creating plays. Sometimes the play call creates the opportunity, mm-hmm. and sometimes the receiver creates the opportunity. Great coverage. I'm going to get back here and, you know, make myself available to Avery. And it's, I'm not comparing Avery to Patrick Mahomes. I'm just the role. You can see the same thing with the Chiefs. He used to have receivers that made themselves much more available when plays broke down than the group he's got now. And if those guys can really, you know, come up with that play where it's third and 15, we're covered, they know we're passing, but I'm going to flow this way with Avery and make myself available, I'll feel a lot better about it. Is that it, boys? That's it. And that's it for the Power Cat podcast. The dogs were interesting. Dude's been sleeping the entire time, and Daphne's been demanding love. Don't we all demand love? We love you. We're the Power Cat podcast. A few housekeeping items here. We do have 60% off right now, short time, at Go Power Cat, because it is signing day. Right. It's signing day.
When's this going up? Right now?
It's going up in the morning.
Sorry.
Go check out our specials. They're always popping up. They come and go. Make sure you're subscribing to Go Power Cat. Make sure you're subscribing to this YouTube channel or the podcast provider of your choice. We've removed the podcast feed, the audio feed, from our YouTube channel. We tried it. It screwed everything up. YouTube's got to work on that. It was a mess. So now you got to go back to your podcast providers if you want the audio. And also, there was one other thing, but my mind doesn't work that way. Gills, do you remember what I was going to say? What? You didn't know what it was.
No Reg golf apparel? Is that what you wanted to say?
I would. This is beautiful, but that's the daily delivery. Okay. 10% off at Mail Reg, M-A-E-L-R-E-G.
10% off.
The life of it. Hold 10%.
Go to the fridge.
Go to the fridge. Yeah, go get you some at the fridge. Make sure you do that. And if he's working, go see Ryan Gilbert. Make fun of him. Say Fitz said hello. That's it for the
What did your mom tell you, Fitz?
Said to be nice to you. Damn it. Sorry.
This has been a GoPowerCat.com and Spirit Street production. Please support this show by subscribing to this YouTube channel or follow us on your favorite podcast platform.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount+. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.